This is the Buddy Baker Project. And now, your host, Jeremy Harris. What a fantastic opening to just another fantastic attraction. I think it captures the shock and awe that audiences feel even today when they go see a Circle Vision attraction, when you really witness the effect of being in that room with those 9 screens around you. To this day, I think it's a technological wonder when you go experience it at any Disney park. You know, someone who lives, you know, sort of on, I mean, really, I live on the East Coast and the West Coast because I'm in school, but every few years or so, I'll go to Disney World, and, you know, when you go on any of the Circle Vision attractions there, it still is. It's really great. It's a lot of those are some of my favorite attractions, I think, are the Circle Vision attractions. And it's a shame that we don't really have them out here anymore. We've sort of demolished our Circle Vision theaters out here. Which is fine. That's progress, you know. That's what happens. It's change. I don't know if it's necessarily progress, but it's definitely change. Which is neither good nor bad. Anyway, it's really good to hear this score. The Circle Vision films would be nothing without their beautiful, beautiful scores. And really, guess who provided the scores to most Circle Vision films in Disney that we know? That's right, Buddy Baker. Which makes a lot of sense, because that is what this project is about. Hello everybody, it's Jeremy again, and this is the Buddy Baker Project. Interesting segue there. But just listen to this music that we have in the background. This is, of course, the score to America the Beautiful, which, as I've said before, is, I think, one of my favorite all-time scores, that Buddy Baker has done for a Disney attraction. I really think it captures the Disney perception of America just in music. It's just marvelous. And it's a great film too, and luckily you can kind of watch one camera of it on YouTube, actually, which is really great. I might provide a link to that in the subsequent blog post for this, so everyone can get a watching of it as well for context. It's a great score, and I'm very glad that Disney released an incredibly high, beautiful quality of just the score in the 50th anniversary box set. I don't know for those of you who got a hold of that, I'm sure most of you did, about 10 years ago now. Oh my God, 10 years ago. That is absolutely insane. Feels like yesterday. Looking at this score so far has been a real treat. First of all, just as a Disney nerd itself, like, it's just great to look at the notes, and go, wow, I'm literally looking at the skeleton of a great Disney attraction, and I'm one of the only people to be able to look at it. Really, it was quite something. Look, going to the sort of reading room in the library and sort of sorting through all of these and taking pictures of everything. For those of you who read my sort of news update about why I'm behind on this project, I had to sort through, I think, 615 pictures of this score. And there was multiple versions of the score. There was sort of a short version of the score, which sort of was just things sort of jotted out, all of the parts jotted out on sort of one staff line. And then there was sort of, then there's the piano conductor score, which I've been using a lot to sort of create a piano version of this piece, so we can sort of hear every note, which is exciting. And we have a little teaser for that at the end here. I was going to leave that as a surprise, but I guess I just said it anyway. I'm too excited for that. And also the actual sort of full orchestral score. But it's really, it was really unorganized when I was going through the folders, so my pictures are really unorganized. All 615 of them. So I have been trying to sort through them and organize them and sort of group them all together, so it's easier for me to go through and use them and look at them for reference when I'm doing this project. It's still quite a lot of work. But it's just great to look at, and it's such a great score. I've been listening to it on a loop all week, because I'm going to be living with this score for quite some time, and I got to know it front and back. You know, it's got to be as if I could get in front of an orchestra and conduct it without looking at it. I feel I want to know it that well. Which is really fun. But anyway, America the Beautiful. Before we get into talking about the section of music that we're going to talk about today, and challenges with that research and challenges of recreating that, let's talk about the history of the attraction itself. So, before this was known as Circle Vision 360. Actually, before it was even known as America the Beautiful, there was, in 1955, well, here's the thing, there has always been, since 1955, a sort of innovative movie, film, experimental experience. It wasn't called Circle Vision 360 yet, it was called Circarama. Now this was, it's very similar in theory and concept. Having a film experience that surrounds you 360 degrees. But this process was called Circarama, and instead of being shot with 9 cameras and being surrounded by 9 screens when you're viewing whatever film is being viewed, it was shot with 11 cameras, and you were surrounded by 11 screens, as opposed to the 9, and being in higher quality. Now, before there was even America the Beautiful, there were different films that were tested in this theater from 1955 until sort of the 1959-1960 Tomorrowland, major update in Tomorrowland, which is then when the first ever version of America the Beautiful premiered. Now, the version of this America the Beautiful, done in Circarama, not Circle Vision 360, the score, because we're going to talk about the music, the film is sort of the same concept, looking at all the natural and wonders of America, as well as the man-made wonders of America, and the people, and stuff like that. The same concept. And the same concept sort of lives on in how Circle Vision has been used in Disney theme parks around the world. So the score for the 1960 version of America the Beautiful was really all choral. And it's quite beautiful, really. It's really interesting. It's sort of a choral rhapsody of America. And it's really quite great. And I'm flashing forward here. This might to 1967, so that lasted from 1960 to 1967, when the process for doing the Circarama films was updated to being shot in 35mm film, and in with 9 cameras as opposed to the 11, and being projected onto 9 screens as opposed to 11 screens. And of course, for this overhaul of the attraction, of course, this was also the time when Tomorrowland was going through really its second overhaul as a whole, really first major overhaul, where the whole land was completely changed for the sake of progress, and the good form of progress, progress that actually moves forward. This was the version of Tomorrowland that we Disney fans sort of look back to and go, that's what Disney is. That's Disney. That's Disneyland. That was what Disneyland was supposed to be about. And all of us sit here crossing our fingers that after 2019, when Star Wars Land opens, that they will attempt to go back to that philosophy for Disneyland's Tomorrowland. Although, I don't want this to be an opinion podcast, which might change in the future because I have too many of them. you'll learn that about me fairly soon. I can't contain it much longer, but judging by what we've seen, sort of the executives' quote unquote creative decisions have been of late, with all the rumors we're hearing of different attractions or overhauls of attractions, I don't know if we're gonna get the Tomorrowland of our dreams, unfortunately. But we can still hope, and they'd be fools not to do it. So I also err on the side of being optimistic, and there is still room for possibility that they will. Anyway, but this, not to get off topic, but so this version of Tomorrowland was about really how technology is going to improve mankind. And that was really sort of the theme of Tomorrowland. Really, the theme of Tomorrowland when it first opened was more about sort of just exploring all of the different, I would say, just all of the different aspects of what the future can hold. In 1967, and when Walt was planning this before he died, the Disney philosophy was shifting toward the future is going to happen. And so these are going to be tangible things that really can happen in the future if we put our minds to it. And of course, at the time, Walt was working on, after the World's Fair until he died in 1966, working on what would have been the first version of Epcot, which is unlike the Epcot we know today, which was going to be Progress City. And of course, in this version of Tomorrow, in the 1967 version of Tomorrowland, we had Carousel of Progress, which at the end, you know, you would get up out of your seats, go up the stairway or moving platform, and you'd look at the huge scale model of Epcot. So this Tomorrowland was really about, just wait, all of this stuff is going to be real tangible technologies that are going to transform America, and it's going to happen first here at Disneyland and Tomorrowland, and then in real life in Progress City, and then hopefully every city in America. Of course, Walt died, and you can't continue with something that bold without Walt's vision. And of course, let's be realistic. Progress City would have gone through many, many, many changes before it would ever be built, so we'll never really know what it's like. It was a pretty interesting idea, and I have a theory about that, of course I'm getting off topic, but it all relates. I know how to make things all connect in the end. But anyway, I have a theory about how Progress City would have worked wonderfully while Walt was alive to be able to guide it in the right direction so that it could work. But once that man died, or he would have died if we're functioning on a hypothetical that he lived long enough to have it up and running, given the way corporate America is today, that place would have been, I don't think, a great place. Just given how corporate America is today. And don't get me wrong, they've always been like that. But when you have someone like Walt Disney guiding the vision, it could have worked. But you needed a Walt Disney. And so I'm glad we don't have Progress City, because I think it would have just been a disaster without Walt. So I love the permanent World's Fair that they are currently neglecting. A little slip of opinion there as well. Anyway, let's get back on track with Tomorrowland 1967. And relating it back to our topic of America the Beautiful, which will then get us back on track with Buddy Baker. Alright, I told you this was a wild ride. A wild ride through my sporadic thoughts, really. But anyway, a lot of people say, when I have conversations about this, and when I think about it too, about the nature of Tomorrowland, I go, what did America the Beautiful have to do with Tomorrowland, future, quote-unquote, sci-fi, which really wasn't the approach to the 1967 Tomorrowland? And I say it has everything to do with it. The answer I always used to give to this was, well, because Circle Vision 360 was a new way of experiencing film, so it was really about the technology as opposed to the content of the film itself. Like, as in, the content of the film was just sort of as a test, like a sample. Like, look what you can do with film. Here, we're just going to show, you know, shots of America. Which is not, I don't think, is an incorrect theory about how that fits in with Tomorrowland, because the Circle Vision Theater, ever since it opened, was used for that. The film was sort of a sample to show the technology. However, I argue that the 1967 version of America the Beautiful, content and technology itself, fits in perfectly with that version of Tomorrowland, which, as I was talking about earlier, was about the things that are going to transform America: transportation, technology, home goods, new ideas. So why not have the first attraction you really see when you walk into the land be this film with new-ish film technology that looks at the American landscape as it looked then, you know, what would be then present day. Look at America as it is now. It's beautiful. It's a great, special place. And now let's walk through Tomorrowland and see how it's going to be even more beautiful. Even more greater, by all of these technologies that are going to come to life in this place in Florida. That's really what I think that Tomorrowland was about. I don't want to say it was advertising for Progress City and Epcot, but it kind of was, but it was also about capturing the future, the tangible future that can happen for this country. So I think America the Beautiful works perfectly in Tomorrowland. Perfectly. So anyway, America the Beautiful, the attraction, with the beautiful score by Buddy Baker, which we're going to get into in just a little bit, ran until the 80s, where it was replaced by two films. One being American Journeys, which was essentially the similar concept to America the Beautiful, just updated. And then they'd also show Wonders of China, which was also playing subsequently in the China Pavilion in Epcot, with a score by Buddy Baker, which we'll get into eventually as well. So two Buddy Baker scores have played in the Circle Vision Theater in Disneyland, America the Beautiful and Wonders of China. And then in 1996, I believe, in celebrating the anniversary of Circle Vision technology, they brought back for a limited engagement America the Beautiful, and I believe it ran there for that year, so 96 into 97, and then 97 is when Tomorrowland closed to be to be refurbished to the Tomorrowland that we have known for the past almost 20 years now, give or take a few years. So that's sort of the brief history of that building, the Circle Vision building. As we know, from then on, it became the queue for the Rocket Rods, where they actually kept the Circle Vision Theater intact, and there was a portion of the queue that used that theater. So that's pretty cool. You can walk through there and see a bit of the history. That whole queue was actually, it was better than the ride itself. The queue was essentially looking at Tomorrowland's history. A lot of people hate on the Tomorrowland as it was in, like, from 1998 to 2000. But it definitely does not hold a candle to the 1967 Tomorrowland. I am not arguing that at all. But I don't think it was as... I don't think it committed as much sins as I think it commits now. It was bold. Like, they took bold risks and did original things. They didn't work, but they were risks, and they were bold, and they followed through with that being the principle of Tomorrowland. Yes, some attractions are going to be gone to be replaced by newer ones. And they might fail, which they did, unfortunately. I think the intention for the Disneyland version of Innoventions was noble. And to put it in the... where Carousel of Progress was, I think was a noble idea. That whole thing sort of fell apart. It was okay for the first 2 years or so, but then it just... And then once they stopped doing the rotating thing, it just sort of was a mess. And it's a mess now, to be frank, too, even if it's the Star Wars launch bay. But anyway, I'm getting wildly off topic now. This might as well just be a podcast about Tomorrowland, which I don't think is wrong in talking about this attraction. And in talking about Disney music, especially Buddy Baker, who did so much scores for Tomorrowland in that time in the 60s. But anyway, it became the Rocket Rods, and when the Rocket Rods failed, it is what it is now, which is Buzz Lightyear's Astro Blasters. Now let's talk about some music and where I am in that process. So... listen really quickly to the opening little bit, as it is in the recording, of America the Beautiful. Just listen to it. Great, right? bold, big, beautiful, the awe of being in the Circle Vision Theater and seeing what you're seeing, the majesty of America. She is a rich land, as the narrator will say. It's great. It sounds really simple, right? You know, just very bum, 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 just a little fanfare, right? Wrong. That's what I thought this past week when I sat down to go, okay, I'm going to work on the opening, and that's what we're going to talk about for our first official episode about America the Beautiful. You know how we talked about Buddy Baker's sort of obscure system of writing, how he really uses the notion of polychordal structure as opposed to just sort of polytonal or just one chord. He uses multiple chords on top of each other for pretty much everything. So we listen to this bit of music here. You know, it sounds just like a easy fanfare with an easy chord progression. Simple, basic American fanfare. Very Copland, John Williams, you know. No, this is Buddy Baker. This is very Buddy Baker. This is classic Buddy Baker. And we'll hear it more distinctly in moments where it really is just incredibly obscure. So one of the weird things about looking at this score, especially what I've been working with right now, is the piano conductor score. I'd have to sort of cross-check this with the full orchestral. He doesn't put down what key he's in. He just sort of writes as if it's going to be either just in C major or A minor, or just in just atonal in general, as if he just doesn't want to limit himself to a key or the ideas of tone in general. He just wants to write, and what chords come out, come out. That's the impression I get by looking at this opening moment in the piano conductor score, that he doesn't want, or if he falls into a key, which he does fall into what appears to be D minor. I could be wrong about that. But he doesn't want to state it. It's stated in the music, but he doesn't want to sort of predefine it before going, you know, by sort of writing the key signature. He just wants to go and see where the chords take him. So, is that a simple opening? Melodically, yes it is. To our ear, he makes it sound like a simple, majestic, epic fanfare. But in reality, it's all obscure chords. Most of them are polychordal. Most of them are chords on top of chords. On top of chords. So, I put this opening moment together for you to listen to on piano. Sadly, it's the part after the very first sort of fanfare part. So it's the bum, 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 bum. So just take a listen to this on piano, and maybe you'll get a better sense of this moment being not what it seems to be. Take a listen. Okay, so it sounds a little more complex, right? Hearing it on piano. Now, this can be because you're probably saying to me, Jeremy, you know, well, that makes sense. I mean, the voicing is, you know, sounds just incredible. I mean, there's so much voicing going on. Yes, this is true. Something I've noticed is that it seems, I don't know what he's like when he's sort of sketching things out to begin with, but it seems that Buddy Baker has, because he's an arranger, it seems that he has the mindset of, I'm writing for an orchestra, so I'm not going to sit at the piano and doodle and write it for the piano and then sort of adapt it for the orchestra. No, it seems like he's approaching it. I'm writing this for the orchestra. I'm going to write it with those voicings in mind, even if I'm maybe sitting at the piano or writing it away from the piano. Buddy Baker seems like the kind of guy who writes away from the piano. He doesn't seem like the guy who wants to limit himself to his own technique at the piano, which is commendable. It's incredibly hard to do. Many composers try to function with that mindset, and the best ones are able to pull it off. They struggle and they pull it off. Doesn't mean you can't figure out an accompaniment figure on the piano. It just means you want to try to not sound like you. You want to sound like the piece you're writing for. Buddy Baker is very good at maintaining his own style just because of his harmonic approach to things. But this sounds like America the Beautiful. Adventure Through Inner Space sounds like Adventure Through Inner Space. Universe of Energy sounds like Adventure Through Inner Space. No, I'm just joking. It sounds like Universe of Energy. World of Motion sounds like World of Motion. Haunted Mansion sounds like Haunted Mansion. It's very distinct. So this sort of debunks the myth that a lot of outside people have that Disney should be about simple things. Disney can't do complex things. Disney has only done complex things. Maybe they don't know that anymore, but this is Disney. So that's that opening moment. Let's take a brief listen at each sort of each staff line, and so you can really hear how unusual he constructs these harmonies and how it is not simple. And that sort of will be my point. Just give a listen. Give a listen to each staff line. Okay, so we can hear in the bass line that there's more of a guidance there of where he's going harmonically. But in the treble clef, I mean, those are some pretty wonky harmonies. It's because a lot of them are polychordal, and they're voiced different. There's counterpoint on top of that. And so my point is, and this is sort of going to be our trajectory for the rest of looking at this score, I think, is this fanfare simple to our ear, as it should be? Is it actually complex and filled with intricate details so that it's of its own and matches the tone of the piece? Yes, it is. That's how we're going to look at the rest of this score. We're going to hear the Disney sound as being something free and happy and as we might say, kind of light on the ears. But in reality, it was meticulously crafted. These are harmonies that you don't jump to because they're in us. These are harmonies that were crafted specifically for this project. I mean, of course, they've been used before. But Buddy Baker sat down and went, no, I'm not just going to do a simple this. I'm going to take maybe this simple major chord and put this on top of it. I'm going to play with it. I'm going to, you know, invert it. What is it? Sounds better like this. Does it sound better like this? That is going to be, I hope that's our jumping off point to looking at the rest of this score. It's America, but it's Buddy Baker's America in music. For the scenes that are sort of about the wilderness, do we hear like some Aaron Copland? Is it Appalachian Spring? No, it's Buddy Baker. So we're going to look at things that seemingly sound like something else, seemingly sound like, oh yeah, that's that sound. Is it? Yes, but crafted in a more detailed manner. So that's sort of our jumping off metaphor. Sounds simple? Isn't. Simple fanfare is more complex than meets the eye. So I'm happy to have shared my progress so far, my research and my little tangents about Tomorrowland and Disney, my sort of brief analysis about our jumping off point for looking at the rest of this score. I hope to each week be able to look at the different sections of the film. So the Revolutionary section and the New York section and that. Some of it in the score that I have is out of order, so we'll see how we're going to piece it together. So just bear with me. This is great. I'm glad you've all come along with me for this journey. And I will see you all next week. This is Jeremy with the Buddy Baker Project, signing out. Have a magical day.